Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
There's a certain like extremism that's been growing on Islamic social media, and I think this week it kind of like just hit its
peak. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Cousin
Connection
podcast. You were about to forget, yeah, weren't you? I think this is episode 3 of the unofficial Ramadan series.
Yeah.
You've been slacking this year a little bit, yeah, but like, you know what?
It's part of the vibe. I actually wrote it down. I was like, this Ramadan, like, literally feels like the quickest Ramadan ever.
We said that last year.
What?
We said that last year.
It's even faster. I think someone even said that, like, it's a sign of the time. Well, no, the Prophet actually said it's a sign of times where, like, years will feel like months. Months will feel like days, and days will feel like what?
Months will feel like weeks.
Yeah, sorry.
And weeks will feel like days.
Days, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it actually does feel like that now, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is why we should take more advantage of the fact that we have another Ramadan to, you know, get what? Is it how I said it? I know. I don't know why I said it like that. What? Stop. Okay. But yeah, so we just got to take full advantage. And also, it's the last 10 days of Ramadan. At least when you're seeing this, we'll be in the middle of the last 10 days. But right now, it's officially, since yesterday night, as of recording right now, it's the last 10 days. So this is where you got to, like, bog down. Is it bog down? No, not bog down.
Buckle down?
Buckle down. Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know one of the most heartbreaking moments in the last 10 days is?
Oh, I know. But you tell them.
All my girls know when you when you can't fast and you just like you genuinely like I genuinely feel heartbreak. I'm just no.
Especially when it happens like a few days right before.
It's very depressing. Mm-hmm. But I actually made a note here in our podcast ideas.
What?
I was saying, you know, don't feel sad because we are still getting rewarded for obeying Allah by not fasting. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It gives us more time to focus on making more dua. Like, mm-hmm. you can still wake up in the third of the night. I know you can't really pray tahajjud or tarawih, but you can still up your dua and your dhikr. And, you know, there are other kinds of acts of worship and rewardable acts, like donating during Ramadan is such a great idea. Mm-hmm. Donating anytime is being charitable is always good, but specifically in Ramadan, when your rewards are going to be multiplied, take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, like cooking for your friends and family and like people in the community, that's a form of charity too. So like, that's also a good idea.
Yeah, that whole thing of like not being able to pray is such a like foreign concept to guys. Like even now, we're still like trying to wrap our heads around it. A lot of guys still don't understand. You know, the ones who be like, "Why aren't you praying?"
Yeah. I swear, somebody else said that when we were at Navat's house.
Really? Oh,
or
no,
not. They didn't like say, "Why aren't you praying?" They're just like, "So who's praying with us?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was like,
it's like, yo, we're all friends. Our cycles are aligned here, buddy.
That actually happens, you know.
Really?
The more you hang out with someone,
yeah,
your cycles just align.
That must be like a pheromone thing, like something you guys give off to each other.
Someone was like, when you end up syncing Bluetooth with your friend. And I was like, that's a good one.
Yeah, there's a whole side of like Muslim girl memes that we probably like just don't get.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you guys are doing to maximize your rewards? Because I know like we've always given some suggestions, mm-hmm. but we want to hear from you guys.
Yeah, especially, well, for the last 10 days, I feel like, how much can you really do? Like, there's, I'm not how much can you really do, but I feel like there's like the basic things, like make sure you're reading the Quran, making sure that, I think I saw a video of a guy making suggestions of things that were recommended, and it's like making sure to pray Fajr and Aisha in congregation with people. I know Fajr is a little bit harder, mm-hmm. for a lot of people, especially in depending on where you are in the West, like it might not be a place that's easily accessible, or like maybe you're just not with family at the time.
Right.
So that might be a little harder. But Aisha is usually a little bit more easier to do, no matter where you are for the most part. So that's something to keep in mind. And then also like making sure that I think even one of the suggestions were like to pray Tarawih fully with the imam. Like, I guess that's also recommended. There are a few recommended matters that I didn't even know about that they were recommended matters. So I just took them into account. And also, of course, there's the other things like reading more Quran, making more dua, and charity.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why the last 10 days are when people kind of ramp up their acts of worship mm-hmm. is because it's believed that Laylatul Qadr will fall under most likely the odd nights within the last 10 days. And
technically,
so,
mm-hmm. just one thing. No, technically, I'm remembering the glass. Technically, mm-hmm. Laylatul Qadr can be on any night
Of
Ramadan.
No, of course.
But it's most likely to have it happen on the last 10 days.
Yeah. And then even from that, like,
yeah.
even more likely to be on one of the odd nights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, just some Muslim facts for you.
and you know, it's also said that if you actually catch that night, mm-hmm. that the dua that you make gets accepted. But, you know, there are other times throughout the month where your dua gets accepted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the dua of a fasting person, mm-hmm. Especially when you're like right about to, like when you're breaking your fast and you make dua, that is said to be accepted.
Yeah.
But
there
also,
there are so many ways mm-hmm. that we are told that your dua can be accepted. I guess that's maybe one example of, you know, when they say that Allah is the most merciful,
mm-hmm.
like he grants so many different opportunities.
Exactly.
For when you can either get your sins forgiven or getting your dua accepted.
Yeah. There's mm-hmm. also, there's one more Friday left in Ramadan.
Yeah.
By the time you're listening to this, it might actually be Friday.
Which actually also falls on the 27th night of
Ramadan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the hour between Asr and Maghrib.
Mm-hmm.
That's your golden ticket.
Yeah, exactly. So just, you know, put it on a calendar. Make a. I'm sure your friends will probably remind you. You have some good friends around you. They'll remind you. Like, put some, what do they call it? Calendar notifications.
Oh,
and
send yourself
and stuff
a
like
reminder.
That. Yeah, I definitely need those.
Create your, like, duat list,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I know we've talked about making duat in the past and just, like, really just not holding back with what you're asking for.
Yeah.
Because when you really put things into perspective, what happened?
No, my voice cracked.
Oh. when you really put things into perspective, like you're asking literally our creator, like the Lord of the worlds, mm-hmm. where what seems impossible to us is possible to him. So ask for whatever it is you want. You want to get a high paying job? Ask for it. You want to get married? Ask for it. You want to have kids one day, inshallah, ask for it. Like, just ask for whatever it is that you want. Obviously, you know, don't be asking about, like, harming other people. Don't be doing all that. That's too much. But, like, you know, ask for the good things that you're looking mm-hmm. for. And inshallah, Allah grants it for you.
But one thing to keep in mind also is that it's not only about you in that moment of asking for it, but it's everything that surrounds it as well. So another suggestion, which we should always be doing, is just avoid any sins that you can, as many sins as you can,
because
that also affects your ability for your du'as to be accepted, right? So as long as you avoid, just, I know that we're supposed to be doing, but it's very important for the last 10 days to avoid it, as even keep more attention to that, even for the smaller ones, right?
There's for sure, there's definitely etiquette on making mm-hmm. du'a, right? Like, so really just upholding that, it's the word I want to use, not purity, but just making sure that you're really paying attention to, you know, the language that you're using. You're not swearing and mm-hmm. you're not backbiting other Muslim brothers and sisters or mm-hmm. people in general. You're not yelling at your parents, for example. You're not, you know, just try avoiding the things that may impact the like the chances of your dua to be accepted.
Yeah.
But then, like, if you guys
and
look
also
up,
your rewards in general.
Yeah, you don't want to impact your reward ability for mm-hmm. fasting all day, but there's like the etiquette. Have you seen that before?
The etiquette of
making dua,
like how you must first, like
the sandwich method, as they
call
it.
Yeah, like first make sure you send salawat upon the Prophet, and yeah, there's a specific like thing for doing it.
I actually wanted to like quickly go mm-hmm. over it. Let me just pull it up.
I saw online that there was a Safina Society was making a series on dua and like specifically what
mm-hmm.
you should.
I saw that.
Yeah. And I think he actually mentioned like the sandwich method and all those things. So that's another good source there to check out, basically.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search and this one came up from Human Appeal. Well, firstly, it's always good to have wudu when you're making dua.
Yeah.
But start off with the salawat on the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and then use Allah's beautiful names to call upon him. So you have 99 names to choose from. Pick one of them, pick a couple of them. And you know what? Actually, when I was going through the names, I think it was last Ramadan, when you actually look at the meanings of the names, you can use certain names.
Mm-hmm. For that, like, specific things.
Exactly.
That you're
looking for. Yeah. And I'm like, yo, like, that's so cool. Okay. And then praise Allah as he deserves. Face the Qibla. Of course, if you're doing this after prayer, you're already going to be facing that direction. Why am I so out of breath?
Yeah. What else was I about to say? Damn.
Wait, this isn't the one that I was looking for. Maybe it's this one. Oh, here it is.
How many things have you saved? Okay. There you go.
Okay. Okay.
This girl.
So as we were mentioning, there's the etiquette on how to make dua.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about the dua sandwich, as they call it. And you said that Safina Society has a series on this.
Yeah.
We'll link that below. It's actually a really good series. I've been watching it.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, to go over the dua sandwich, you want to start off with praising Allah and thanking Allah for your endowments and your blessings.
Mm-hmm.
Using some or all of the 99 names of Allah if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
I think what might be better is using specific names that are related to the dua that you're asking for.
Mm-hmm.
Then sending the blessings upon the Prophet, making salah on the Prophet and his sahaba, sallallahu alayhi wasallam. And then asking sincerely for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, counting your blessings and showing gratitude. Then this is where you make your dua. So whatever it is you're asking for. Whether it's in this life and the next, then you want to close it out by making more salah upon the Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, and his companions. And then you express gratitude, thank Allah, recite the Shahada, and then you can close it out with Al-Fatiha and then Ameen.
Yeah. And I believe it's suggested to do this all in Arabic, but for the parts that you don't know in Arabic, you can do them whatever language you understand.
Yeah, the actual part where you're making your dua, you can do that in English too, or whatever language is your native language.
Yeah. So that's another way of making sure that you're kind of like, you know, setting yourself up for not
success.
Success, exactly. I don't know why I was about to say failure.
I know. I can tell.
For success when you're making dua.
Mm-hmm.
And even though, like,
some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
You're almost guaranteed, in especially these last 10 days, for a lot of your du'as to be accepted just due to the atmosphere and the time.
Yeah.
This will definitely help with that.
No, for sure. I guess we should tell them a little bit about our weekend or what we did, right?
Oh, yeah. So this weekend, we actually had a little bit of an iftar. You know, we saw how Aisha was, you know, doing her big iftar. And we're like, yo, we got to one-up that, right? So, you know, friend of the show, Nabat, invited us all to her house. And we had like a nice little, you know, iftar event with all the friends and the fam. So we were all like chilling there. She went all out this time, though.
She really did. I was impressed.
She had like lights set up everywhere. She got down to like the water bottles. Even the water bottles had like the stickers on them that said like Ramadan Mubarak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had the date plate set up with the... Yep. I think it's like...
the crescent with the star.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it was the crescent with the star, but with like the dates on top to like with the shape. But yeah, that was really good. The food was good.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone brought their stuff. You know, Sada had her tuna salad.
It was a casserole.
Oh, tuna casserole.
I was like fully messaging Amir while I was making it. I'm like, yeah, I don't know how this is going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very encouraging. He said, if no one else takes a piece, I will.
And guess who took the first piece? Okay. And actually, everybody took some.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody ate from it. So you know what? Honestly, it worked out.
They all liked it. Thanks,
guys.
Yeah,
they all liked it. No one had to force it down as a respect. I'm playing. we had all this food out there.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is. After like taking a few bites, the guys let me down.
Yeah, you guys really let me down.
I don't know what happened to you guys that day, if you're listening to this. But like,
I feel like you guys were being so shy.
Yeah.
Like,
what is it about the guys being shy?
That's
about
why
eating?
I was like,
what
do you want this? Me to serve you too?
We
like,
are men, okay? We eat food. We make sure all the plates are empty at the end of the day, okay? We must be grateful for what we have. What? What's like, that face you're making?
Ruling with an iron fist.
Huh? Yeah, I was disappointing you guys, okay?
But you know what we did?
Come in there and empty all the plates.
You know, if you're ever hosting a large group of people and there's always that panic when you're hosting of like, oh my God, all this leftover food.
Mm-hmm.
So what Nabat did, very genius idea.
Yeah.
She bought a bunch of to-go containers. And her and I, after we had like the main course, then there was like snacks and stuff and dessert.
Mm-hmm.
We put out all the dessert and then we went into the kitchen and quickly basically like, plated all the leftover foods for one for each and every person.
Yeah, I think that's something that everyone should do from now on. Like, I don't know what it is about whenever you have a group event in general, people, I don't know if it's in consideration or something, but all the time, there's always that the person who's hosting is left with all this extra food in the house.
Yeah.
There's like chips and cookies. And you know, you think that someone would want this, but a lot of times people like, they don't want a lot of these extra like
snacks
and stuff because maybe that person has a certain diet they're trying to keep on. But like when you have when you have this all in the house, it's hard to control yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm talking from experience. I may be talking about myself because this happens to me all the time. But I feel like this is like the best solution to this issue. Just getting Tupperware and giving a little bit to everyone. Because everyone kind of, and even if they don't want it themselves, they can give it to whoever they know. They can give it to someone, help a homeless person in the street if they need to.
Yeah, but it was like, it was such a good idea because we like pre-packaged everyone's like dinner or iftar part. And then everyone had their own little to-go bag. And then when it came to dessert, before we like really got into the games, we plated all that, like Nabat plated everything. And then before the night ended, she just like caught us all off guard. She's like, okay, guys, before, you know, people leave, I actually just wanted to thank you all for coming.
Mm-hmm.
And she just pulls out this bag and gave everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Personalized gift bags with like little gifts in there. And so Amir has his here to show you.
Yeah.
A little unboxing vibe.
This is Ramadan Mubarak. She gave a little, you know, bookmark for everyone.
It's so
this is a good idea for anyone who wants. And I feel like actually Aisha did the same thing for her day too.
Her gift bags were like very, very nice.
No, this is a really nice one too. What are you talking about?
I know, but like turn it around. Don't you see the engraving on it?
Oh, yeah. She gave us like a little bookmark with the engraving that says.
Maybe we'll insert like a clip.
Of it, they can see it on here. I can zoom in. We got 4K now, Sara. Definitely zoom into this
because it's just a little bright. That's all.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because you're wearing white, good. So they're throwing it off.
Yeah, and she gave some chocolates, and of course, you know, the thing that everybody needs.
Yep,
a nice little portable prayer mat. Lastly, actually, sorry, she gave a little like personalized note for each person who came to the event too.
It was so nice. Like it really, I was just like, that is so nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice touch. And yeah, it was just a good night with the friends and fam.
Because
I feel like the first like week or two, you're kind of still adjusting. And, you know, a lot of us were spending time at the like our musalla or like if you're going to any community iftars on the weekend just to be with the community. So like this was nice that we were all able to get together.
Exactly. So there's a couple ideas you might take away from for your next iftar if you're going to have one. Maybe next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll see. But I don't know who's going to be hosting next year, but I'm just saying.
You.
I knew you were going to say that too. Inshallah, you never know, man.
I just have to get myself
together first.
Okay, maybe I'll host. We'll see.
But something I really wanted to talk about, like that was happening this week and kind of like got me a little angry at the online Muslim community, specifically a certain group part of that community. Because I feel like there's a certain like extremism that's been growing on like Islamic social media.
Yeah.
And I think this week it kind of like just hit its
peak.
His peak.
Yeah.
Because I think anyone who's online has heard about Suhoor Fest at this point, right? And on its face value, like I can see how someone might have a problem with that because they just hear, oh, you know, it's a place where people can just go and eat a bunch of food at nighttime, you know, it maybe it's not the exact, you know, spirit of Ramadan. But like that's thinking, that's looking at it when you don't have context, when you don't have like, when you're not as cultured. Because one thing to also remember is that like this is something normal in a lot of Muslim countries. Just I don't know if they know this, but in a lot of Muslim countries, they usually close everything during the day, and at night times when people come out and they eat and they go to the shops and stuff, they usually they pretty much flip their hours. So this is not like a foreign concept. This is not something new that the Muslim society in general is coming up with, right? But they're also missing the fact that Suhoor Fest, because it says suhoor in it, maybe it throws off, they think it's only food. But personally, from people I know who've gone there, it's more than that. It's actually more of a bazaar, if anything. So it has food, but it also has a bunch of, like, you know, clothing shops.
Like and vendors. And
vendors, exactly, that you of different types that you can go to and you know, support local Muslim businesses. Because for the most part, this is happening wherever it's happening, because it happened across the country in different spots. You're a lot of the people who are showcasing there and the vendors that are there are local, so you're gonna help your local Muslim, which is like something that we should be doing, right?
Exactly.
So but then of course you had that one side of TikTok that always comes out, the haram police basically coming out saying, oh, you know, this is what is this Suhoor Fest, what is this free mixing that they keep mentioning, which first off, like this idea of free mixing, like when you're going out to a public event, buddy, you live in the West. You are already free mixing the moment you step outside of your house.
West or East. Like
West or anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Anywhere in the world that you go where there's shops, a mall, anything, you're going to be free mixing there.
Yeah.
And free mixing, it has context. Like if you were in a mosque maybe and there's like separated sides, but then maybe the women come to the men's side and men go to the women's side, that's where you might be able to make a case for free mixing, right? But in this public area that's outside, you just sound extreme, which is what I'm trying to get to, right? And specifically, there was one guy, I'm not going to say his name, but he went so far as to say that because of Suhoor Fest, there are people in Gaza who are starving right now. And what's happening to them in Gaza right now is because directly related to these events that they're happening, the Suhoor Fest that are happening in the West. So this is just the fact that it's reached its peak. I've seen this growing on the internet.
Yeah.
But it's become more and more annoying over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, like, maybe it's because of the sources that they're learning from. Because the one thing that may be controversial is that, like, usually whenever I'm trying to learn from someone, the last place I'll go, or not the last place I'll go, but like when I'm trying to learn from someone, there are certain characteristics that you'll look for in a scholar or a teacher, right? Most of the time, even if someone has knowledge, if they don't carry those characteristics of someone who I would want to learn from, I might shy away from that, or I might like try and get a second opinion. But unfortunately, a lot of the people who are online, who are giving da'wah, you know, alhamdulillah, they're giving da'wah, but they might not have the best character, or they might not have the best form of teaching it. And they may be too aggressive. They might be too judgmental in certain cases and aren't taking in all the aspects of all the aspects of
You mean like being, they lack the wisdom.
Yeah, they lack the wisdom of teaching it, right? They have the knowledge, but they lack the wisdom. That's basically, you got me right there. Okay, you got it, Sara. And that's made me more wary of, before I was more like gung-ho about it, but it's made me more wary of the people who are becoming more and more popular online, right?
Yeah.
Like, sure, it's maybe you can use them to, I don't know, learn.
I think
certain things, I don't know. It's just, I would always go to a second opinion, someone who's a little bit more, has a little bit more wisdom when when they're teaching.
Yeah, like, people have different teaching styles. Some, you know, like if you're thinking of like the Akhi Aymans and Abu Taymiyyah, where they're a little bit more harsh in how they speak to like the brothers specifically.
Yeah.
But they're targeting a specific audience too, right? So like their method of teaching can be a little bit more harsh and more street style, if you will.
Yeah, but I think it's just the pupils from that may not have the backing, or like sometimes it gives them a little bit of an arrogance from what I've noticed online. The people who are commenting are usually people who learned the knowledge but weren't taught how to teach that knowledge correctly, or how the wisdom behind spreading that knowledge.
Yeah.
So it's just a bunch of people who have the facts. Like, sure, you know, you're right technically on a factual level, but there's no wisdom behind how you're dispersing those facts.
Yeah. And I think
that's where you get these like people in the comments who are making TikToks like that.
The dangerous thing about giving da'wah online mm-hmm. is that because it's accessible to literally everyone, like, mm-hmm. you know, you can pretty much, your content can be accessed by anyone.
Yeah.
You don't know the knowledge level of everyone, right? Like, there could be a new Muslim, and new Muslims can be very impressionable, right? Because it's mm-hmm. all new. But then you have to remember that whether someone's a new Muslim or they've been born and raised into Islam, but maybe mm-hmm. they haven't learned, or maybe there's someone who has learned everything and mashallah, they're very knowledgeable in the religion of Islam.
Yeah.
Regardless, you don't know who's consuming your content. So it's always best to have mercy on your audience. And, mm-hmm. you know, you having wisdom is actually a key part of teaching Islam.
It is.
And teaching the rules of the religion, because you mm-hmm. never want to sound like you're looking down on people because they don't do X, Y, Z, for example. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, the same way that the Prophet didn't teach us everything that we need to know in one day, like, it was all spanned over his lifetime and during his prophecy, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be very careful with how you kind of say these things online.
Yeah,
I know sometimes people, they want to take the harsh approach and they think that by yelling and saying like, shame on you for doing this, that people are like, oh my god, he's so right, like, we really messed up.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always work, and it's probably not going to be received as well as maybe you thought it would.
Yeah.
So it's always best to just take a little bit of a more compassionate approach. And then possibly your message will actually be received in a much better, with a much better, like, people will receive it better in terms of like their perception of it, you know?
And unfortunately, like, because a lot of these, sorry, I'm going to dig on them a little bit more, but a lot of these youth, it's mostly youth who are leaving these comments and being mm-hmm. very judgmental. Like, remember, in Islam, there are a lot of schools of thought on certain things too, right? So they might see something, but because they don't have the wisdom behind knowing that there's maybe a different school of thought in something, they might chastise a person for doing something a certain way. And then when that person comes back with some saying like, nah, you know, this is another way school of thought, like this, this is another accepted way of doing it, they might actually end up disrespecting that person and that school of thought, and might even fall into something that might, because remember, your tongue is like, it's easy to get into Islam, but with your tongue, it's also easy to be taken out of the fold of Islam, right?
Right.
So they might say or do something
mm.
that they start mocking their own religion and not realizing that this is just another school of thought that's also accepted, and then saying something that might go against their own religion. So this is why I feel like it's very dangerous to on how we interact with other Muslims as well.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, when you learn for the first time and you have all this knowledge, you're like, you know, you're so excited because you want to start teaching. And then if you see your brother or your friend or whatever doing something that you know, it's like, oh, brother, that's haram. You know, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Don't eat Cheetos because it has whatever people say.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but you get so excited to like want to try and help your brothers and sisters because, you know, they say it like, and it's true. If you love someone for the sake of Allah, you want good for them. You want khair mm-hmm. for them, and you want them to, you care about their akhirah, right?
Yeah.
And that's totally fine. That's true and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you love them and you genuinely care for them, be gentle with them too.
Yeah, and especially in this month where we're supposed to be showing the most patience, sabr, and like, and the most mercy towards each other.
Exactly. So, you know, and then imagine you're talking to someone you don't know, like mm-hmm. you're leaving a comment online. And we've talked about the haram police, and people
mm-hmm.
had differing opinions on even using that term. Some people don't like it. Some people are like, yeah, you're totally right. And they, you know, understood what we were trying to mm-hmm. say. But when it comes to advising people for the sake of Allah, like, first of all, check your intention. And this is obviously like we're reminding ourselves first, because
mm-hmm.
for me, I would never want to humiliate someone on a public platform just for the sake of telling them like you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are different circumstances. Like if someone's misguiding people intentionally, that's different, right? But if it's like someone's innocently posting something
mm-hmm.
And you're just trying to tear them down and embarrass them, like you think you're doing more good than harm in this situation? I don't think so.
Exactly. And specifically for that person who I mentioned earlier, I didn't say his name specifically, but the one who was talking about how Suhoor Fest and Gaza might be connected, that same person is known for like posting, first off, thirst traps.
I saw.
And other content, like red pill related content, that it, a lot of the some of the stuff goes against Islam specifically. And the thirst traps specifically are very like, they'll chastise a woman for being on social media and then start posting stuff like that. So like, who are you to talk?
Yeah.
You know, people can do the research and find out who that is.
I'm sure if you're on like Muslim TikTok, then.
Yeah, but that was just something this week that like really just grinded my gears. I was so annoyed by the reaction towards this and like not having any patience in trying to find out exactly what's going on here and what's the intention behind this, where the funds are going to. Because a lot of times, the funds that are being raised from this, from what I saw, were a few of the vendors there were taking their earnings from that and sending it to the people of Gaza. So maybe that's how it's directly related.
True.
Mm-hmm. But that was something that I wanted to speak about this week. I see you wrote down something here that I actually just saw this today.
So did I.
Didn't know about this. Oh, did you see it
today
too?
Yeah.
Rami Youssef?
Yeah, I watched the clip of his model. Like just that one clip.
Yeah, I literally an hour ago I saw this. And everybody was surprised that they allowed him to say that.
I was too.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think, you know what? I'm going to say this. I feel like they allowed him to say that because there was the second thing he said, which is also appropriate, appropriate too. I feel like, you know, that should also be a thing because there might be people who disagree with that. But he did mention on there, like he said, we need to free the people of Palestine. And also, I want the hostages to be free as well. And I feel like, honestly, that's a fair statement. But I feel like that was the only reason, the only way that would let him to say the first statement is by saying that we also need to free hostages. Because usually that's not part of the conversation. That's not really mentioned by people who are vehemently pro-Palestine and trying to protest the things that are going on in there. Because that's almost like an, what do you call it? It's almost accepted, universally accepted that once the there is an official ceasefire, that the hostages will be released, because that's been the stipulation the whole time. But I think also part of the stipulation was to release like the 7,000 hostages in Israel that are being held for no reason.
Yeah, like even the Palestinian hostages.
The Palestinian people, yeah.
Yeah.
That they unjustly arrested.
I was shocked because you know where the U.S., where they stand. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was shocked. Like, I was like, wow, they actually like broadcasted this. And then it was very nice to see the audience reaction. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're all like Rami Youssef fans, but they were like really applauding hard and cheering. Like,
I feel like because the tide has shifted, right? Like even I think I saw an article. I only saw the heading, the headline, but the Prime Minister of England, I believe it was the Prime Minister in England, he came out saying that we're no longer going to providing arms to Israel because they haven't been holding up their end of the bargain. Like, they haven't been following the stipulations that we've given them.
Canada, too.
Have they stopped completely?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. So a lot of the countries are stopping, at least supporting them on a, like,
financial, I guess, and weaponry
and,
basis.
Yeah, weaponry basis, right?
Yeah.
So that's a positive that's been going on. And Canada officially, we mentioned that last time, it called out for a ceasefire. So there has been movement, but it's not what we're looking for, clearly, right? But hopefully with this coming out and the more universal acceptance of the fact that this is not right, which it should have been from day one, we'll get that ball moving. Because I think even America is now pressuring them.
Are they? The states?
Yeah, because it doesn't look good for the states, right? Especially with
the elections coming up.
True. Elections change a lot of how people talk and like
I
what
know.
Their tune is.
But then
changes
it makes
a lot
you
of tunes.
Like, it's such a like, I feel like they would only call for a ceasefire or stop, you know, sending weaponry if they know that it'll benefit their campaign. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Because of the election, that might actually help out.
Such a self-serving like.
Yeah, it's always gonna be. It's always self-serving.
I know.
The only reason they're helping them, or were originally supporting them for multiple years since the 80s, since the 50s, basically, is because it served America's interest and the universal like the West's interest in general, right?
Yeah.
Once they stop serving their interests or stops, you know, getting the votes and getting them into office, that's when you start seeing the support drop.
True.
Okay, guys. The our new podcasting theme might have died because I forgot to switch out the batteries, but it's all good. What were we talking about?
It died at the most convenient time.
Exactly. The moment you mentioned,
I'm a little skeptical.
I'm just saying, okay. But okay, so speaking of Rosa and is not real, specifically is not real. There was actually a conspiracy going around.
Was there?
Yeah, because I don't know if you heard, Sarah. Okay, I'm not going to do that. I don't know if you heard, but like, there's going to be a solar eclipse coming on April 8th. Is it April 8th? No, it's April 8th, is it not?
The 21st.
It's 21st, shoot.
Just double check.
I don't know if it's related to that, but there's something about a solar eclipse and something called a red heifer, which is basically like a red cow that, what?
I stand corrected.
What is it, April 8th?
It's April.
I knew it was prior to that, but yeah. So I don't know if you guys heard about the event. There's evangelicals out here who are praying on like basically Al-Aqsa being destroyed. Like I think we talked about it a few weeks ago, but there's this whole thing of how they're digging under Al-Aqsa, trying to say that they're doing for archaeological reasons, but really it's kind of just messing with the structure or the foundation of Al-Aqsa, the compound in general. And eventually it will, what they're hoping or what we believe they're trying to do is make it all collapse. So then they can rebuild in that area and build it into like a third temple. And this is, I think, where the red heifer comes in, because I think it's part of like the Jewish
scripture
or like their prophecy.
Yes.
Prophecy that like if there's a spotless red cow, or they call it red heifer, that is found, they, once they sacrifice it and like mix the ashes with the certain water that's they recently uncovered, it will basically bring on in their prophecy the next Messiah, because you know everyone knows like they don't believe like the prophet, our prophet, and Prophet Isa,
Jesus
were actual prophets. Like there's a reason that they tried to kill and Prophet Isa, right? You know, they didn't get to it, alhamdulillah. But because of that, they've been waiting for the next one to come, and they feel like this will kind of like start that process. But on the other hand, you have the evangelicals out here basically saying like, oh, this is good, because once this happens, then Al-Aqsa will be destroyed. They'll be able to build this like third temple mount or something like that, and that will bring on their Messiah, or pretty much they believe that it'll bring back down Prophet Isa, and then they'll be like brought back up in like some type of rapture. So all of this is going on around the time that like it's supposed to be Eid for us, basically, right? Of course, we don't believe in all of these conspiracies that they're coming up with, but this is something that they've been like pushing for recently, which is why we've been really scared. And at least from a Muslim perspective, we're a little bit more worried, because we're like, what's going to happen to Al-Aqsa? Like these, right. We have two major religions in the world currently who have vested interest in seeing it fall. And like, what are we going to do? What do you think might happen if they actually tried to like take down Al-Aqsa? I feel like, okay, go ahead.
I
was going to say, I feel like nothing's going to happen.
What do you mean?
Like, there are so many, a lot of the quote-unquote Muslim leaders are already in the pockets of a lot of people. They have another vested interest in this here monetarily, this area, or being, having relations with is not real, that if this goes down, like, they won't really do anything. They won't allow their people to do any, like, they themselves, the people who have the power, won't do anything. Because we already know they're in the pockets of them, man. Just from, like, what we've been seeing, especially what's been happening in Saudi with the people who were trying to support Palestine at the time, at least early on. Now, I feel like they've kind of flipped on that a bit because they've seen the negative publicity from it. But all of that combined, I feel like maybe the common Muslim might want to do something about it, but do we really have that drive to like go out and do, well, what can we do, right?
If you really want me to comment on this, I just, our Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has warned us already of what is to come.
Yeah,
so we already know what to expect. We just don't know when it's going to happen mm-hmm. exactly. In terms of like, what do I think will happen? Do I think they will destroy Oxygen? Masjid al-Aqsa. I don't think they will mm-hmm. as early as April 8th.
They know what the backlash would be from that?
No, because if they truly knew what the backlash was, I don't think they would have
even spoke about it.
Spoken about it, or I don't even think what's happening to the Palestinians would have been happening. Like if they actually knew the repercussions of the tragedies that they're causing right now mm-hmm. and the genocide that they're basically engaging in.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be doing it if they actually knew what was to come for them. Mm-hmm. But I just think that although the Muslim leaders, a lot of them, leaders of the Muslim countries have been pretty disappointing thus far, mm-hmm. there are a lot that are actually pro-Palestine mm-hmm. and there are a lot that have done things to denounce mm-hmm. the opposing side. So if it was to happen, it would absolutely cause a global uproar. Mm-hmm. And potentially like a, it's not called a civil war, but what is it when you have a war between like two religious groups?
Two religious groups?
Yeah.
Holy war?
A holy war. That's mm-hmm. what it's called. I think it would I think it would cause something along that,
yeah,
that sort of realm situation, yeah. Or at least a lot of like hostility and like the world as we know it would absolutely change. Like mm-hmm. Muslims wouldn't just sit back and be like, oh, what a shame. Like.
Yeah.
Al-Aqsa, like no. they wouldn't just sit back and let it like fall and then not do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cuz I don't know, if with us living in the West, being part of a country that even also might have a vested interest in that as well, it's a very like unnerving or almost like unsettling feeling. Because especially with how we were mentioning earlier, how like time feels like it's going faster, and they're saying that's a sign of the end of the times, mm-hmm. and with all of this kind of building up to that, honestly, I don't feel like. Oh shoot! something just fell down off the camera there. I don't know what it was, but I hope that when they try this, that it fails, then we can be like, ha. You guys thought.
But also, there are so many. There's what is it like 1. Something. Billion Muslims in the world.
Yeah,
I think we're also underestimating the power of like actually uniting the Muslims. Mm-hmm. If the Muslims are truly united, mm-hmm. y'all better be scared. Is all I'm saying.
But there's been a lot of work in recent, you know, couple decades or a few decades to disunite the Muslims in a
absolutely,
lot of ways.
Yeah. Absolutely, and we can probably call it out, but that's a whole other topic for another day. but. Mm-hmm. There are a few things that Muslims just don't play with. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are divisions when you're looking at it as a whole.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there are, you know, certain things within Islamic culture mm-hmm. that I'm sure will bring Muslims together. And if it comes down to like, you know, look at the power of the BDS movement. Mm-hmm. Like, look at the power that people have. Yeah. And that's not even just Muslims. That's like people in general. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So...
I think what surprised
me. May Allah protect us. Yeah. The Muslim.
But I think what surprised me about this whole conspiracy is how brazen they're being about it now.
Yeah.
I think I actually saw a video of someone who went to Congress and he interviewed a bunch of different Congress people who are known to be evangelicals. And he asked them about like, is not real and like their thoughts on them destroying Al-Aqsa, or not destroying Al-Aqsa, but like the Temple Mount, and basically all those conspiracies that have been currently going around, and whether they believe them, whether they support them. And they're like, yeah, we totally support it. Like if we as Americans can do something for it and continue to support it, then we will. And like they're fully bought into it. Right. And you know, you can kind of be like, you know what, you actually believe what you at least you believe in your scripture kind of thing, right? Mm. But still, it's unsettling just seeing how these people in a country where they themselves say, like, there's a separation of church and state, right? They, even though... as
we all know that's a lie. Yeah. In America?
But they're clearly outwardly saying that we don't believe in that. And we're going to push our own narratives and our own beliefs on this whole country that is what they consider a melting pot. People, so it's just interesting how this conspiracy has recently gotten a lot more
it's gained a lot of traction
because of how everything seems to be aligning and how I forgot to even mention this, but the red heifers were found in Texas. Mm-hmm. So that's how it's also connected to America in some way. And they've already, and actually they were found back in 2021.
Yeah.
And they were flown over.
To protect them and preserve them, right?
Yeah, they were actually flown over in like American Airlines to Israel, and they're currently just waiting to be able to do this sacrifice. Like, it's all being set up at this moment.
Yeah.
So it's only a matter of time. We just have to wait, I think, like a couple weeks to see what happens from that.
I'm sure they'll probably sacrifice these
cows,
but I don't know if they're actually going to destroy.
It's like a whole Y2K situation, right?
Yeah, they're just trying to like gain some like momentum, and all this propaganda is coming out.
Yeah, they're saying that this is going to happen the moment we do this, and just watch, guys. You know, I'm just saying.
You know what, though?
We're still going to be celebrating Eid like it's nothing.
I'm just a little skeptical because I feel like whenever there's a show being put on social media, it's usually a distraction or something else, you know?
I think it might be a distraction as well.
Where is that? Like, do we have the background song? Doo-doo. What is it?
What?
The...
I don't know what we got on here. Let's see.
What's that song?
Nope.
You know the, like, the X-Files?
I don't have that on here. I'll put that on here next time. We have a tiny bit of a soundboard on here.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Wait,
X-Files.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. God, that is loud. Okay.
Conspiracy theorists. That's what I was trying to get at. But yeah, I just feel like it's a distraction for something else.
It might be, honestly. It might be a distraction from what's happening in Gaza right now.
Yeah.
By using this, you know, because this conspiracy sort of, well, it does include a holy site for Muslims, they'll be more focused on what's going on at Al-Aqsa in that area than what's going on in Gaza. So I can see that as well. You know what? Honestly, it's so confusing. Now with the internet and everything going on, it seems like everything's going on at the same time. Anything can be a distraction from the really important things.
Listen, y'all, Cousin Connection family, for those of you that are Muslim and participating in Ramadan, it's the last 10 days. Make sure you are making those dua like your life depends on
please.
It, okay?
I definitely will be. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, so I don't know how long we've been recording for. We could have been recording for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, 50 minutes. We lost half. I don't even know if we have all the audio. We'll see if it turned out properly. But until then, I mean.
Thank you guys so much for listening. But before we end this podcast, here's a word from our spot. I'm just kidding. Don't forget
I
to.
Wish. Inshallah, guys. If you're making dua, make sure to add us in the, you know. Cousin Connection guest sponsors.
Don't forget to subscribe. We are on the road to 10K for YouTube and Instagram. You guys on TikTok are showing us mad love, so we appreciate y'all. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you, the YouTube and Instagram family as well. Like, you guys are really loyal, and I can tell because you know who you are. Those of you that have interacted with us, whether it's through the comments, DMs, etc. So thank you guys so much for all of your support, your dua, your comments, like everything. It means so much to us. We genuinely hope that you guys have been enjoying this Ramadan. It's been a time of reflection and gratitude and patience and just growth overall. Inshallah, we live to see another Ramadan and it'll be better than the last. But yeah, comment, subscribe, and follow us on our socials, Cousin Connection Pod. Look out for this episode. Next week's episode. We'll see you guys again soon. And we'll eventually bring back our TikTok lives.
Yes, yes. After Ramadan, of course.
Yes, exactly.
But until then, we'll see y'all next week.
Bye. Bye.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.